All right, so the last time we were together was at our public hearing on the 11th, and we have a number of comments that we got in writing for that hearing, and I've asked Andrea to print out copies for me, and does anyone else want hard copies of the information?
Yeah, I printed my own out, thanks.
Okay, all right. So if you want the hard copies, just let Andrea know. Otherwise, you can read it online. Okay, and actually, we had some good conversation at the public hearing. We anticipated a crowd, and as sometimes happens, there wasn't a crowd, so people were able to speak for longer than 2 minutes, which is a good thing. But as typical public hearings restrict comments to 2 minutes. All right, so today we're here, and we've gotten to a point, I think, where we've heard a significant amount of information, both from the board itself, from the department, and from folks who have been deeply involved in public service board proceedings. And so I think we're at a stage now where we can start to identify some of the recommendations that we would like to make and try to put those together to submit to the legislature. And we have a timeline for us going backwards. So that's our schedule and deadlines is number 4. But I'm wondering if we want to just for a second talk about that. Do you have anything further printed out for us, Andrea? Just what we've had the first time. So our next meeting is on November 3rd, and when we worked backwards initially, I think we said we wanted to have our recommendations complete close to Thanksgiving as we can get.
Yeah, well before Thanksgiving, yeah. The board's hearing schedule will need to be. So we had said November 3rd for an initial draft document. And that would allow some time. There might need to be an extra meeting potentially between then.
Right.
Well, you would have the 17th.
We have the 17th, and that is the week before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so that could be the opportunity to make
final
changes.
Okay.
But Andrea's right. We have back-to-back hearings every day almost in December. It's unusually full.
You're very full. Yeah, I was afraid of that. And this room is going to be full?
Yes.
Well, we'll just have to kick the board out.
Yeah, I guess so. We just have to not make any decisions.
Okay, yeah. All right, so that's kind of our timeline. Our goal is to get as complete as we can before Thanksgiving. Okay, so what I'm going to ask is if folks, I did ask each of us to call through all the comments that we've received and all of the information that we've had during each of our meetings, and to really identify those recommendations that you feel individually could be made. And I'd like to just start, are there any real significant issues that are you'd like to bring up? Is there one issue or more that you think is very important? And start with Tony. Do you have a specific recommendation that you want to be sure is on the list just off the top of your head, or are you ready to wait and see what the called list is? Because we do have a list of things, I think. Who has that?
Well, I made almost a little more than 5 pages of suggestions.
Oh, good.
I didn't. So, okay. I guess I should say this now. I think it's important that that we stay within the boundaries of our official charge, mm-hmm. and really hone in on those recommendations that can make the existing process more readily accessible two Vermonters if they choose to participate in the process. I think we heard more about suggestions or thoughts or ideas that don't fit in the boundaries of that charge, and if people want to pursue them, they certainly have the right, and they have the ability to petition the legislature to take those things up. And if that's what they want to do, I would encourage them to do that. But I think it's pretty important that we limit ourselves to that. And if we limit ourselves to that, I didn't hear a whole lot of difficult things to implement. In fact, I think I heard that the Public Service Board is already enacting a lot, if not most, of the things that we heard suggested, and we just haven't. I think it's been impossible for the public to yet see the fruits of those enactments. I heard, and I think it was articulated by one witness that I was thankful for, to say, well, I'm really I'm not here about how we can how the public can better participate in the process. For me, it's about how the public can better participate in the decision making. That's not our charge. But I think that maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm paranoid, but I think that was the underlying theme of a lot of what I heard folks talk about. And I know that probably stems from the frustrations that they have experienced in the process. So from my perspective, I think we already have, I think there's a good list of stuff that we can suggest to the legislature, and I don't think it would take us that long to wrap up our work.
Well, I'm hoping not. I think you're right in that we should be sticking to the charge that we have before us, and the interpretation of that, I suppose, it could be stretched depending on who you are, so your perspective, but right. I think you're right.
Right. And I would ask one further question, probably a group decision. Are we going to expect that every proposed recommendation be supported by the majority of the committee, or are we happy to just forward every suggestion that any one of us thinks is and quite frankly, I don't have an opinion on it.
So I would say that's a question that maybe we can answer after we've had an opportunity to see what's there and what's not there. Let's hold that thought. But I agree with you, there has to be the conversation about minority opinion or putting everything in and saying that not all are supported by all of the group. I mean, there are options. But let's see what we have first, and then we can talk about them individually, and perhaps there's a way to deal with that, respond to that question. So, Judge Mello, I'm going to turn to you. You're next in line. Do you have anything you'd like to say initially in identifying recommendations or how to proceed?
Yes, thank you, Senator. I'd like to follow up on Representative Klein's statement. And it isn't because I necessarily disagree with him, but I think it deserves some discussion. But before I do that, is there a list of recommendations somebody's pulled together? I'd love to see it.
So I understood our homework to come up with some suggestions, and the way I took that task was to essentially list a number of ideas that have risen to the surface as a result of conversations among staff who have been privy to, you know, some of the work of this committee, or this working group, rather. And also my own suggestions based on what I know of how the board has worked, how it's changing, and in all cases taking the charge to be easing citizen participation in PSB proceedings. So I have a typed list. I have, not knowing whether we were going to, what the format of this meeting would be, I haven't distributed it yet. But if Senator Lyons would like, I could distribute paper copies and have and email you a copy for purposes of discussion right now.
Well, that would be helpful to me. Is that the list you were referring to, Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Can we do that?
Yeah, that would be great to see.
Would it be possible to email that to the judge?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
So in the meantime, let me respond to Representative Klein's comment. And again, I'm not suggesting that I necessarily disagree with him, but let me just put it on the table. Many of the comments we've gotten, and these are probably the ones that were most emotionally presented to us, I think were addressed not so much to the ease of public participation, but rather to the meaningfulness of it. Several people expressed frustration that in their perception, the decision of the Public Service Board was already a foregone conclusion, because it's essentially a political process, and if the governor decides that a project needs to be done, and the governor appoints the people who are going to make these decisions, then these people are just going to do what the governor wants, and it's all a show. There's no meaningfulness to it, and so it would be a waste of time to spend a lot of time on the ease of access when the real problem is the meaningfulness of it. So a lot of people have put that on the table. And at the very least, perhaps we should include in our final report, if we decide to limit our recommendations solely to questions of ease of public participation, we at the very least should, I think, include a statement in the report making it clear that we've received these comments, and many people are going to consider these steps, if implemented, to be a waste of time if the issue of meaningfulness is also addressed, but we either are or not addressing it in the report. So that's one thing I wanted to say in response to Representative Klein's comment. Another thing is a number of people have expressed frustration with dealing with the department. The department, of course, exists for the purpose of representing the public. One of the officials is the public advocate. I think there are two problems there. And again, I'm not necessarily suggesting that these are problems we should be addressing, but we've heard information about them, and I think we ought to at least put them on the table for our discussion here today. One of those problems is that, there are three problems. One is that Public Service Board proceedings traditionally involved electric companies, gas companies, and telephone companies, utilities, huge utilities, huge by Vermont standards utilities. More recently, they're including much smaller utilities, and they always had little water supply companies too, but their processes were really set up to provide due process to the parties in these great big cases. And so their procedures are really very formal indeed, much more formal than the procedures used by the Act 250 people, even though they are also supposed to be quasi-judicial and following the Administrative Procedures Act. So one problem is that the board traditionally, because of its history, the process is a very, very formal one, and these big cases are immensely complex. So it's extremely difficult for somebody who doesn't have a lawyer and a battery of experts they can hire to have meaningful participation in the process. Secondly, the department takes a position, and I'm not questioning its validity, the department's public advocate takes the position that I cannot give anybody advice, I can't give them any advice, legal advice. So what I can say to the members of the public as public advocate is very limited. The public advocate's view of his role is he doesn't decide what position to advocate on behalf of the public. He takes his marching orders from his superiors, and that's the position he advocates. And he can't give advice to any members of the public. So that's a second problem that people are complaining about with the DPS. The third problem with the DPS is, I think I'm right about this. I'll be corrected if the commissioner tells me otherwise, because he'll know better than I. But I think the Department of Public Service represents ratepayers, which are, in traditional utility law, really the equivalent of the public, because it's the big utilities versus their ratepayers. But in the kinds of cases people have been talking about with us, there are other interest groups that are not ratepayers, namely landowners who feel like they're being steamrolled by this hugely complex process. If I'm right that the department really represents ratepayers, not the public generally, then there's nobody representing landowners in Act 250 cases. Of course, they can hire lawyers of their own. But one of the complaints we've heard is, gosh, the utilities use as a hammer against us landowners the fact that, well, if you don't buckle under, we're just going to condemn your lands. We'll take it by adverse possession. And so a number of the people who have complained most bitterly to us were landowners in the 248 process of the Public Service Board hearings. So I think these are all important questions, and they're certainly legitimate issues for people to be raising. If we interpret our mission narrowly to be addressing only the ease of public participation, making it easier, that's fine. I mean, that is what the statute says. But if we say nothing in our report to the legislature about any of these other issues, we'll really be talking about the tip of the iceberg in terms of the complaints we've received. In other words, we'll only be reporting to the legislature on a small part of the complaints that we've received. So I just put that out there, again, not because I necessarily disagree with Representative Klein, but I just think that if we take that narrow view, we should understand that we're going to be not talking about perhaps the majority of the complaints we've received from members of the public.
I'm going to give Tony a minute. Do you want to...
There's something he said, though, that I think needs to be...
Okay. Go ahead.
...corrected. This is Margaret Cheney, and Commissioner Chris Recchi is not in the room, but our general counsel has the statute about who the department represents. You were wondering whether it's accurate that the department just represents ratepayers, so I thought that we should address that.
Let's do that.
Hi, Judge. It's June Tierney here. Under Title 30, Title 30, Section 2 lays out the department's charge, and it specifically says that in cases where hearings are required, which would be in a 248 case, for instance, the department, through the Director of Public Advocacy, shall represent the interests of the people of the state unless otherwise specified by law. So, and to my knowledge, under 248, and Jeff will correct if I'm wrong, 248 doesn't specify otherwise, if I'm not mistaken. So there also is a more newly added provision about how the department is supposed to give particular attention to ratepayer issues in rate cases. But I think it's more accurate to conceive of the department's mission as representing the interests of the people of the state. And I think historically it's been the case that ratepayers and the people's interests have been congruent, but as you pointed out, that's less so now.
So, okay, well, thank you. That's very helpful. Then let me ask you this. How on earth can one agency represent the public interest when there are interest groups among members of the public in a particular case of importance that are absolutely in conflict with each other? The interests of the ratepayers in a big 248 case may very well be diametrically opposed to the interests of the land-owning members of the public that the line is going to go through. And so, in that case, doesn't the department have a conflict? How can it represent both?
So the person in the room who might be able to speak for the department is Jeff Commons. Do you want to respond to that, Jeff, or do we want to wait for the commissioner?
Well, I can only say that the way the process has worked is that my clients, the public, elect a governor, and the governor appoints a commissioner. And that has worked, as has been noted, probably better in the past than it does right now. But that has been the historical process that's been in place. So those competing interests that you refer to are expressed through one election, the election of the governor. And I recognize what you're saying, and can only describe what we have now.
Okay. Now, Tony, yeah. Did you want to speak to Judge Mello's comments?
Judge, I appreciate your comments, and my comments are not meant to invalidate anything that we have heard that falls outside the boundaries of our charge. But if the legislature wanted the expansion to hear about those things, they would have expanded the charge in the statute that we passed. Number one, number two, I'm thoroughly convinced, and there may be some people in this room who will back me on this, that some of the big issues that we've been hearing about, I believe that they will take those issues to the next legislative session through a variety of avenues. So I'm not worried that the complaints about the department or changing the process to Act 250 or, you know, expanding other areas won't be addressed in this next legislative session. I'm convinced that they will be. I'm just concerned that if we expand from our narrow band, then we are actually probably weakening or diluting the very specific suggestions that we're required to put forward that would absolutely address the problem of the public getting access to the current public board process. And that's why I think we should limit our attention to that.
So I would like to interject here that there are some things I think that do go beyond the scope of our work. That one of those being shifting environmental considerations from Public Service Board to Act 250. That's clearly not in our purview in this working group. The sense of those comments that I got was that Act 250 has become much more user-friendly than it used to be. So the lesson I pull from that is that it's user-friendliness that is of concern, so that perhaps we take that information and put it under that category. There's the other area that I think of concern was the quasi-judicial nature, the very formal nature of the board process, and I think that complements what I just said about Act 250, that there were concerns about the board being intimidating and overwhelming, and we heard that from folks. So how do we change that culture, that sense of participation where people feel comfortable? So it's not so much that I wouldn't be recommending that the board move from a quasi-judicial process to something different, but I would, I do hear that it's a difficult culture for some citizens to fit into. So in that sense, so those are the kinds of things that we weren't charged with saying, is the quasi-judicial process overwhelming? We weren't charged with that. But we have heard that it's friendlier in other places, and can't we make it friendlier? So I agree with both of you. I don't think we can leave out what we've heard, but I think we can hear those things that fit with the charge that we have.
Well, that's right, and I don't think it's outside of our. I think it's within our charge that if we were to explore a recommendation that on some of the non-utility or the smaller, less convoluted, intense, intricate projects that we could make a, if they couldn't do it already, that we could either recommend or by statute create a process where the board could sit with the public in a non-contested, and even not a workshop where all the other highfalutin lawyers are not in there, and the public could absolutely state their concern to the board itself. And I think that's a good and valid recommendation that would not require the public to have attorneys and would not require them to be intimidated or up to snuff on all the processes and the laws, but that they would feel comfortable and welcome and that they could speak in their own terms, in their own language, and the sitting body would hear it and understand it and maybe, have a question and answer with them and a real interaction. And that could probably go a long way to disarming a lot of the distrust that may be happening.
Okay. Thank you. That's good. So, Judge Mello, anything else that you would like to add at this point?
Well, I'm going to defer entirely to you, Senator, and you, Representative, in terms of what you think the scope of our charge is, because your legislators are yours, and I just want to make sure. I wanted to put that on the table, basically for two reasons. Number one, I didn't want to disappoint the legislature by only addressing our role narrowly if they really were hoping we would do it broadly. And secondly, I know several of the people who have made comments to us will be disappointed if we have a very narrow view of our mission. But you guys were part of the legislature that passed the law that created our working group, so I'm going to be entirely guided by you as to what you feel is the scope of our mission. And the narrow scope that you're referring to is certainly going to be easier for us to grapple with than some of those other issues would be.
Okay, thank you. So, Margaret Cheney, you have a list. Do we have that list? Can we have a copy of that list?
This is Jeff Commons. If I could just take a moment, I've gotten a note that Chris Recchi will not be able to attend today's meeting. He sends his apologies.
Okay. So this is just like a calling out. I have a list of my own, but
All right.
Well, let's go through yours.
Okay. So as I started to say earlier, we engaged the staff of the board explaining what our goal was, to find ways to make it easier for citizens to participate. And so this reflects not just my thoughts, but those of many people. And also to put this into context, as I said on August 5th, I think it was, when we had our first meeting and when I gave my presentation on board processes, we have heard many of the complaints that it is hard. And as many people have said, and I think you too, Judge Miller, earlier today, this quasi-judicial process is, to give it a metaphor, a black box and very difficult to navigate it if you're not a lawyer. So way before Act 174 was signed into law, I'd say essentially, when I came on the board, and since then we've had a two-thirds change in the makeup of the board, we've been looking for ways to make it easier, listening to what we're hearing, not only about the difficulty, but also some of the frustrations about towns' points of view, for example. So I had some pages in that presentation that were on pages 20 and 21, and actually three, from 20 on, that gave examples from how we drafted the new net metering rule to some of the ways we were adjusting our practices, having heard many of these complaints. So I might refer you as some refreshing at some point. You might want to look at pages 20 on of that presentation from August 5th. But so this list that I made is, we've divided it into things that would require a statutory change, changes that are discretionary on the board's part, going along the same road that we've started to go down, looking for opportunities to be more user-friendly, and then the third category is, as I said, improvements already underway. So I'll quickly go through these. I think that one of the themes that we heard was the confusion, understandably, about the difference between the board and the department, and that's the first bullet there. I think we should change the name of the board, and that would be in line with what most of the rest of the country does, to call it the Vermont Public Utility Commission. This confusion is apparent, especially when you even consider the initials of the two agencies, the PSB and the PSD. And then the further confusion engendered by the fact that they're separate, where we've got a wall between us, but in many parts of the country, these are one agency. So that's the first suggestion. Then there are some statutory changes that are a little more technical, but I think would go a long way to making it easier. For example, in the second bullet, confusedly, and you know, it actually really doesn't make sense. Currently, towns and regional planning commissions are required to file their comments on projects before the petitions are even filed. It's very hard to comment on something if you don't know what it is. So just as a matter of common sense, have comments submitted after a petition is filed, not before. The comments of towns and planning commissions are really meaningless if they don't know what they're commenting on. The third one is also minor, but right now we're required to publish notice twice in newspapers. Have it include a requirement to publish on our website and maybe once in newspapers. I'll get back to other ways that we can make publicizing our proceedings even better than that. But these are the ones that are going to require statutory change. I feel strongly we should bring back Vermont Interactive Television. We, on big cases in the past, we could have people come from all over the state, go to the place that was closest to them. If you lived in the Upper Valley, you could go to White River Junction. If you lived, you know, in Burlington, you could go to, you know, one of the Chittenden County, Burlington area hearing rooms, Montpelier, all over the state. You didn't have to drive to Montpelier. And it was interactive. You could see us on the screen, and we could see the public commenters on the screen. It was much easier. Talk about ease of participation. Don't make people drive all over the state. That was a huge, I think, loss of investment decision on the part of the state. We've heard a lot, even before Act 174 was passed, about creating a position of a public assistance officer. We think if such a position is created, it should be at the department, not at the board, for conflict of interest reasons, because we are the deciding body, we are the court. But have, again, people brought up potential conflicts of interest at the department level. You brought one up today, Judge. So that's why we also think that this public assistance officer would be best dedicated to answering procedural questions and facilitating informal discussions about scheduling and other matters. People have brought up enforcement. Enforcement is part of permitting. If the conditions aren't followed, adhered to, there is some sense in the public that they don't know who to go to with enforcement questions or just telling people that they think maybe a condition has been violated. So we think there should be more, perhaps in statute, assignation of responsibility and resources for enforcement, and that it be with the department, similar to the department's role in enforcing the DigSafe program. So
you put the public advocate and the enforcement together in one spot?
Well, at the department. But not necessarily in the same position, no.
Okay.
Discretionary changes. A lot of this is about culture, and I do believe we are beginning to change the culture at the board to try to be more accessible and easier to navigate. We think that's a good thing. We want that to happen. Getting back to public hearings, right now statute requires us to publish them a certain way, but there are other ways we could expand, ways we get the word out. For example, including them in calendar of events, front porch forum, public service announcements on the radio. We've already started to do some of this, but as technology offers more ways, we could access those. Front Porch Forum is a local venue here. If we had a project that were being proposed in another part of the state, there might be a listserv where, but we would look for opportunities to make sure everybody knows that there is a hearing or other event happening. The next one is important. I have been to public hearings where the public shows up and they have a microphone and opportunity to comment, but they often don't know what the project is, because we can't tell them about it. We can't take the position of the petitioner or the project developer or the department. We can only be there to hear the public comments. So I think that there should be, as part of any public hearing, a segment of time set aside before that hearing. I think logically it would be presented by the department, but the department would facilitate rather the developer or any other relevant person being there to explain the project to people, perhaps have maps, answer questions, so that when the public hearing actually starts, they know what they're talking about. It's kind of a surreal feeling to show up at a public hearing but not knowing anything about the project, but we can't answer questions about it. So I think that would be a big one. The next one is basically finding ways to send notices of all elements of these events. For example, pre-hearing conferences, let adjoining landowners know when they're happening. Right now they are only sent notice of the public hearing, not of the pre-hearing conference. Pre-hearing conference happens well before anything else gets underway. So let people know about every step. And then also put it on our website, of course. Allow parties to participate in pre-hearing conferences and status conferences by telephone. We've started doing that. We did that today so that people, if it's not a technical hearing, where yes, they should be in the room because it's like a courtroom, make it easier for them. Don't make them drive from across the state just to be at a scheduling conference. And then circling back to the public hearing, you know, we hear comments at public hearings. We could make it more of a practice to, at that technical hearing, bring up the concerns that were raised at the public hearing and get some answers about those concerns there under oath, and then address those public comments in a separate section of the final order. Right now, often people feel that those they can come and make public comments at a public hearing, but they don't necessarily have any confidence that those are noted at all. So literally address them. This is logical. Hold more technical hearings in the area where a project is proposed. If it's in Addison County or Bennington County or the Northeast Kingdom, perhaps have that technical hearing there, not always in Montpelier. That's utterly discretionary. And then if we can't get VIT back, and even if we do, we could modernize technology in the hearing room to allow for more streaming and distribution, for example, perhaps through public access of what happens in this room. Those are discretionary. Another area that would require statutory changes but would require us to initiate a rulemaking. This is just one example where we could change a rule to loosen our own ex parte rule to allow hearing officers to provide more procedural guidance to parties in a case. We could hold more workshops. Workshops are great because they're informal. Anyone can come. It's a back and forth. A lot of what I've been hearing about, you know, the yearning for perhaps Act 250-ish procedures is about that sitting around a table ease of interaction. I think that we could import that value where we can, you know, for example, outside a technical hearing, have more workshop-type interactions where people can just talk, and in this bullet suggestion, have an opportunity to provide procedural information to pro se interveners so that, yes, they're not a lawyer, but they can go to a workshop in this scenario and learn how to what the rules are in that lawyer-dominated world. So that would give them guidance if they're parties in the case. And then we could also hold ad hoc workshops once in a while that are generally held on a periodic basis outside of specific cases, for example, here or in a webinar or in different areas of the state where pro se interveners are located. We can also direct our hearing officers to provide more information to pro se interveners at hearings and invite questions at pre-hearing conferences and technical hearings about the board's rules. And you can read this for yourself. I won't read all of it. But essentially, at these various places where the public interacts with the board, have handouts, answer questions about what to do, how it works. Going on to page three, and this was a suggestion, Judge Mello, I think you brought up at the public hearing we had. Have our hearing officers and the board do more to help pro se litigants from the bench, as judges do. So this is all about, a sort of shift in culture where we recognize this need and interact more informally to help provide that help. We could also, as part of the process, require petitioners to provide our own handouts regarding intervention to notices of filings that petitioners send to adjoining landowners. These are all suggestions, not coulds, that the new, simplified, and that's a suggestion later on, citizen's guide also be provided with the first notice to potential parties. And then change our own practices to find ways, take opportunities to move contentious issues out of the contested case procedure to rulemakings where people can participate more easily and informally. And one example of that is the issue of sound standards taking place in a workshop setting, not in a contested case procedure where there has to be sworn testimony, but rather people can sit around and share their expertise and ask questions or challenge assumptions. And then I think, the list here under changing board practices, I won't go into every one, but they are ways of providing information, specific ways of doing that, so that people have a instruction booklet on how things work in plain English. The fourth bullet also gets to some of the complaints we've heard both at the evening public hearing and then early on in this process about the frustration that MOUs or settlements are often reached ahead of time before people even know about them or can comment on them. We could require that they be filed at least 2 weeks before the technical hearing scheduled in a case so that people can actually have a round of discovery on the MOU before the hearing, so it doesn't come out of left field. And we could have our board staff act more often as mediators. For example, they could conduct a status conference partway through a case to narrow the issues. And even have a pilot program that we would initiate that, this is an idea that I think would require an experiment first, but that in some cases there should be perhaps mandatory mediation. And that would be worth a pilot program. And then this sounds minor, but I don't think it is. We heard that people often don't know where to park. It is very hard to park here. Unfortunately, we don't have any control over that because we, as an agency, we don't have our own parking spaces available to the public. Not even the State House has parking spaces for the public. But we could provide information, kind of strategies on where to park, what to do if you need handicap parking. So it's a little more, you don't have to just circle around. All right, long list of things, some of them already underway. I think we should have a report on our progress in a year. And come back, and as I've said before, we've already started doing this. We did it without the the mandate of a working group, but we don't know yet whether it's succeeding. There are some steps that we haven't even started yet, for example, in the net metering rule, where many of these things are embodied, including templates for people on, you know, to simply fill out when they intervene, including recognizing that certain places in towns are more desirable to towns than others. There are lots of things that we're trying to address all at once. I think we should have a report in 1 year on the progress made. And then on the in the final section here, we have more than a page of improvements already underway. There, many of them are the same ones that I alluded to from my original PowerPoint, but from pages 20 on August 5th. You can read them for yourselves, but I think they're important. I think they will have substantive results. And the one in here that is not in the PowerPoint, and there are probably others too, but in the middle of the fourth page, right now we have a long, complex so-called Citizen's Guide to the 248 process. I remember when, you know, I first saw it, I thought it was rather overwhelming. We want to replace that with a simpler Citizen's Guide to our processes. I mean, just to even call it a Citizen's Guide to the Section 248 process is a little bit paradoxical, because how many people actually know what the Section 248 process is? I mean,
or what it's a part of.
Right. So what is, like, I'm interested
Act
in this net metering solar project. Is this relevant to me? I just think that is a prime example of why that guide is obfuscating. I think that a revised, simpler guide to our processes would have a section on what Section 248 is. But if it's in the title, you don't even know that this is the pamphlet you're supposed to pick up. So I think that's a very important one. Anyway, you can read the rest. EPSB is going to be huge. And, you know, Ann Bishop has explained that many of the ramifications of that to us before, but I think it needs to be in any report, I mean, list of recommendations, because even though it's already underway, it is, like, primarily relevant to ease of public participation, and this is the bridge between the world as it was and the world that I hope will be, that will be easier for people to participate in these processes.
So, Madam Chair, I think we ought to, whatever we do, we should include in our suggestions a report to the legislature that does show what the Public Service Board has already undertaken in these areas, so that they're made aware of it, number one, and then duplication of process doesn't
There's no reason why we can't recommend that
right.
the board continue with the following and
right.
then say, you know, because
right.
I think that
the,
is a very
the other
important
question I would have to the board member is of all the suggestions, and I thank you for this list, how much of it requires legislative action and how much of it is just your internal?
Well, that's how I tried to organize it,
right.
so that the first page.
Yeah.
First
question.
Page, okay.
Titled Statutory Changes.
Okay.
Those would
yeah.
require legislation.
Okay.
Everything
okay.
else is it, are things we could do on our own. And in that bandwidth, there are many that we want to do, have started to do, and I didn't mention it specifically, but one example would be we're going on more site visits.
Right.
That doesn't require anyone to tell us to do that. We want to do that more because we see the need for it.
It's good. So my list is a lot smaller, but this is a lot of work, and I think it does reflect much of what we heard. We've heard since August. So
we could just submit this in the home.
Right, almost. So I think we're almost there. There are a couple things I think we need to ask about. Now, for example, We heard from the public access TV folks that they would be willing to take over VIT, and maybe there's a way to negotiate that so it doesn't have to be legislative. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe there's a budgetary consideration there. The comment, I'm looking at my list, so all of the things that you've mentioned are there. How do we include, if at all, Rule 51 from 250? I think that was the sort of the cultural change, working more closely with folks. We don't have to reference another rule, but I think the idea of having a user-friendly process is very important, and when to discriminate between the more contested cases and maybe the upfront work that we're doing. Records access, we did hear from at least one or two people that having that information either online or accessible somewhere, important. Board mobility, municipal participation, and you've sort of included that with the 21-day period coming afterwards. I think we also heard some comments about a broader period of time, but the time is not. The issue is after the filing. And then the changes to the board name or the department name, something's got to give there. Mm. Absolutely. When we start talking about parties and interveners and pro se representation, I think, you know, one of the things that might be legislative, because it's so clearly spelled out for Act 250, is who are the parties, who participates. And I know you already have rules about that, and it's already in the statute, but maybe we should just revisit that a little bit, or we should ask the legislature to do that. I don't want to do that. Who's a party? And the reason I bring it up is if we're going to have a public advocate of some type, the choice is, does the public advocate advise on process, or is there a discussion that we might have on a public advocate as legal advice? And if it's legal advice, then you want to have a clear definition of who that legal, who can avail themselves of that legal advice. I think there are some nuances to some of the things that you brought up, individual citizens, interveners, landowners who are adjacent to projects. Somehow we have to talk about their ease of participation and the expense that's incurred once people become involved. Will the new procedures at the board obviate the need for money or not? We don't know. So maybe that's a second tier recommendation, that let's get the report back, see how it works, and then figure out if we need to have the funding or something else for the office. So that those are some of the
would it be helpful to,
things that
for
I
for me to articulate, explain, you know, gather with our legal help the party system, and because there statute already does
it does say, have it I
it
know
it does say who's an automatic party, who's a you know who
and how the board decides
and what the steps are to become a party. So I mean that already is in statute, but if it would be helpful to clarify that, we could do that.
No, it wasn't so much to clarify as it was to say if we're going to expand the role of a public advocate.
Oh, I see.
So to provide legal services, then we would want to be sure that it wasn't to everyone.
I see.
You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it goes back to the question Judge Mello had about how can the department represent everyone when there's so many conflicting ideas. Mm-hmm.
There's one thing I would have added to what I was saying earlier about the scope of the interest that the department represents, and that is that already in statute there is a provision for the board to appoint additional advocate for the interest of the public if the board thinks it's appropriate in a given case. I just want to make sure you're aware of that.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well,
Yes.
The site?
It's in 30.
Can you hear what June is saying, Judge Mello?
Yeah. Okay. What's the site, June?
Yeah, 30 VSA 2, and let me get you the subsection, Judge.
30 VSA Section 2?
Yeah, I think it's Section 2B, but I'm checking online here. Be there momentarily.
This is a great list.
Oh, good.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you all for putting that together.
Yes, it's Section 30 VSA 2B, and the provision I have in mind is, in any hearing, the board may, if it determines that the public interest would be served, request the Attorney General or a member of the Vermont Bar to represent the public or the state.
How is that paid for?
Madam Chair, I can't be sure. I would be theorizing to say through the bill back proceed.
Probably, bill back. And then how many times in your recollection has that been used, if at all?
In my tenure, it has not. That would be about 15 years. I believe Mr. Whitaker gave some testimony about that. There was a case in the early or mid-90s, maybe. It was a telecom case where that happened.
Thank you. Yep. That's really good. And that's a board advocate.
That's a board appointment.
A board appointment. So because it's not been used recently, we really don't have a good sense of how it's been...
Of how that works.
Yeah, how it works out. I mean, are there rules associated with this?
To my knowledge, no, there is.
There's a recommendation, mm-hmm. right? So maybe some rules around that, or at least to evaluate the need for rules around that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it is billed back, or does the AG soak it up, or, you know, how does that work?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Anything else? Yes, sir.
So, Board Member Cheney, thank you for doing this. This is a very helpful first draft, in a sense. Can I ask this? I know that we heard from people that all of us felt had some very helpful things to say. Mm-hmm. For example, Annette Smith, and the folks from Vermont Clean Environment.
That's Annette, yep.
And also the folks from Wyndham. Does your list include recommendations from them?
Yes, and not all of them, but we went through all of those recommendations. We went through, as we were asked to do, everything that has been said or submitted to us since we started the meeting. And, as you recall, Annette Smith had a long list of very specific suggestions, and some of them do appear in here. If it would be helpful, I could highlight them, but they...
No.
And the other thing we could do, if it would be of interest, and we just didn't have time to do it, is some of these recommendations also echo the way things are done at the district commissions and through Act 250. So if it would be helpful, I could highlight those as well. But that was, we were looking at every recommendation that we heard. We were considering some of the value behind what was articulated about Act 250 processes, especially the sort of sitting around a table and interacting more informally. So those kinds of things. We try to reflect in this list.
Great.
Yeah. So, and I think all of us went through mm-hmm. All of the stuff that we had, and I guess what I'd like to do is, are there any specific recommendations that are on this list or that we've heard about from each of us that you would like to exclude categorically at this time?
I'd appreciate some time to review the list. I just got it this afternoon.
Yeah. Okay.
And maybe consider making some additions or changes or whatever. But this is, it's helpful to have this as a kind of base to work from.
And everyone else got it at the same time, so I think it's a lot to spring on people all at once, and I agree people need to read this more carefully.
You sure? We're not ready to go? Okay.
Should we see the time frame for that?
Yeah, so I'm thinking, you know, what time is it? I don't have a watch.
2:50.
Oh, okay. I'm wondering if our time is best spent together hashing this out, or if our time is best spent taking this information with us and then coming back together on November 3rd and then really having a working group session. I'm for the latter. I don't know about you. I like pondering on things a little bit, but
I would support that.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there's probably not a lot of benefit to be served by going through this right now.
Somebody mentioned at the beginning of the meeting that they printed off all the recommendations we've received in hard copy. Whoever did that, whatever sainted person did that, could you mail me a set?
Yes. I've asked Andrea for the same thing. That was the sainted person was Andrea.
Who has not yet done
also,
it.
But she has not done it yet, but so she's almost sainted,
you
not
mean,
quite.
Mean, that yeah. Non-existing
got a,
packet.
Got a halo. So Andrea, did you have any luck trying to get Paul Gillies or the other folks there to give us an outline of what they said?
No, not yet.
No, I've got extensive notes, but it would be helpful. I think Paul Gillies, Peter Zamore, Dick Sodek.
That meeting is also available on ARCA's website. Mm-hmm. You could kind of skip ahead to the video of when he's speaking. I could send you the link for that.
Okay.
That might be easier. We don't have transcripts of that.
No.
We have the CD, which is made every meeting, and we have the...
The video is a little bit easier, and
and
we have the order in which everyone appeared. So,
and a couple of people did have handouts.
Yes,
right.
Annette Smith,
Steve Whitaker,
and
Chris Campany.
But the other one that we don't have on that is the letter from Lauren Glenn Davidian regarding
And there's several others.
And Nate and Jane Palmer sent follow-up comments. And
we have some comments from Mr. Pierce. We have comments from a lot of folks.
Right, Mr. Pierce.
Yeah.
We got one today.
Yeah. So I think let's put those things together in a packet. Tony, do you want to get that in the mail?
Yes? Do you want it in hard copy? I could scan
it. No, you can email it.
Yeah,
I could scan it as one document.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm intrigued by Paul Gillies' democratic impact statement idea.
Yes, that was a good comment, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. No.
How do we do that? But he said not home rule. Remember that. He did say not home rule. Just learn to respect the voters, right? Well, whatever the voters say, I'll do. I'm either... in or out. Okay. Is there anything else that we need to have?
So, could we clarify what we'll be doing on November 3rd?
Yes.
Putting
you ready?
Together the final.
So, on November 3rd, come in with any additional recommendations after you've called through the literature that we have that Andrea sends us. So, one, any new recommendations. Two, look through think about the conversation that we've had today. Look through the list that you've so generously supplied and add your own if they are not represented here.
Might I also suggest that there could be deletions as well if people don't agree with them? Or edits?
But all of the above. So edits, comments, and then... how to combine these things into similar recommendations. take things out, add things in, refine. The question about which ones require legislation. So that's our goal. And next time we meet, we are going to just sit here and work together.
Excited.
Work?
Oh, God, will we ever do that? Again.
Yeah, okay. You're having too much fun.
I know. Just good.
I'll be in Germany.
So, and then June's going to bring us a finalist. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chuck Storrow from KSE Partners. I just had some thoughts that were prompted by Board Member Cheney's list, and these come from my experience over at the State House on behalf of AT&T on telecom, wireless telecom permitting, which is governed by Section 248A, little a, mm-hmm. It's a wholly different statute. Subsection E2 provides that if a town select board or planning commission wants the proponent of the applicant to make can compel them to come to a public hearing to present the project to the public, and the public service department has to be at that hearing. So I just throw that out as something that perhaps could be imbued into 248.
So are you saying it's a good thing?
It is. I mean,
having the department present at those, it's the hearing?
What it is that at least 45 days before you submit an actual petition to the board.
Oh, I just read that.
You have to send essentially a draft of what your application or petition is to the town, to the adjoining landowners, so forth and so on. And then within that 45-day period, that either the select board or the planning commission for the town can say, we want to have a meeting with the applicant where you explain what your project is, and the department has to be there. Our clients never had a problem with that. We do that without the requirement of that statute, but it was put in statute.
Do I remember when that was put in?
A couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think so. Okay.
Subsection O in that 248A says that a town can ask the department to hire an expert. It specifically says that that person is not working for the town or necessarily has to adopt the town's position, but typically what will happen is the town will say, department, could you hire either an aesthetics expert or expert on radio frequency propagation? You know, where do you need this tower? So people go out, and so in our experience, the department's always done that. Said, yep, we'll hire.
Okay.
The applicant pays.
Okay.
And then that
expert provides information
yes.
to the municipality.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the other thing, Judge Mello may know a little bit about this. In environmental court or the environmental division superior court, mediation is essentially the default.
Yep.
If the parties say we can mediate until the cows come home, we're never going to agree, the court can say, okay, in that case.
All done.
You know, we'll go to trial. But generally speaking, they force the parties to mediate before they hold the trial. And
yeah, we did talk about that, I think, at one meeting. But you're right. That's been a good process, because then the clerk of the court brings people together. Is that right?
It's actually outside the purview of the court. It's, you know, there's a mediator that is selected, and there's...
Okay.
The order will talk about who pays for the cost of it and all of that. And you go off separately and you try and work it out. You know, there's pros and cons to that, because a lot of times that's a wasted exercise. People are committed to, you know, we're going to oppose this, or the applicant is, we mm-hmm. want to do this, you know, mm-hmm. no matter what. And it's time and expense that's for nothing, but other times it actually, you know, can result in an agreement.
Okay.
And that's interesting, because, I mean, there were two bullets here that where mediation was the topic, and one was the pilot program for to experiment with mandatory mediation, and the other was to have board staff act more impromptu and more often as mediators. But I think we should consider your comments in those comments. Maybe there's a better way to get at mediation, a combination way, but maybe we could all think about that.
Mediation has been extraordinarily successful in civil litigation throughout the state.
I have a few minutes left on the recording, so I'm going to stop it. Let's get back on.
Well, Senator, with your permission, I'm going
to... It'll just automatic.
It'll all be transcribed.
Everything we do, we
everything
just have
will be done.
Big brother will just have to be...
I know.
We're back on.
Okay, good.
There have been reports that towns have actually been dissatisfied.
Oh,
Melanie Pizer, sorry for Upton. There have been reports of towns being dissatisfied with the experts hired by the Department of Public Service. I see no reason why the Department of Public Service needs to be an intermediary in that. The same funds could be billed back for a municipality to hire a consultant of their choosing. And be the client, because otherwise you are back in the same problem of this conflict of interest of who is the client, who is commissioning the report, and when DPS has taken a position in a case to support a project, there I think are understandably whether there are genuinely problems or not, the perception will always be if the consultant comes back with a view that is consistent with DPS's or the petitioner, that there was something murky or untoward going on. So it wouldn't cost any more to have that done directly by the municipality, and frankly, there would be less administrative cost and less burden on DPS staff in order to administer that.
So that's certainly that's a nuance for conversation. I think that's beyond our scope, but certainly having mitigation in place to ease citizen participation is not beyond our scope. So, but the how to make that happen, I think, is what you're saying. How would that be,
just be
most effective?
And part of 248.
Yeah. So if I mean, I'm wondering if I mean you certainly as a board, the board could certainly under its discretion have the pilot,
mm-hmm.
Then how it's done would be open for conversation. If the legislature wanted to order the board, mm-hmm. you know, to have a pilot, they could do that
as
well.
Yeah, and I think often, you know, mediation just as a, if you boil it down to what it really is, it's getting people to talk to each other, right? You're facilitating a conversation, and I just think that, you know, we intend to look for more opportunities.
Good. Okay. Anything else? All right, so hard work between now and then, and November 3rd, we're back together, and we'll try to hone the list. Period.
Thank you.
Thank you.